It is National Invasive Species Awareness Week, February 23rd through the 27th. So let me ask, how much are you aware of the presence and the cost of invasive species in your yard or your garden or your acreage or your great outdoors? Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of the radio show Voices of Montana. Welcome to this podcast. We're defending our health by stopping the spread of noxious weeds and non-native species. That's the theme this week with the Montana Invasive Species Council, or MISC, and their partner agencies coordinating a statewide awareness celebration. Monday through Friday of this week, MISC is turning up the awareness in five different focus areas for fighting noxious weeds and invasive species. So again, good to have you here for the podcast. We dive now into those focus areas with our expert guests and frontline fighters. With us in studio is Liz Lodman. Liz is the program administrator for MISC. Hello, Liz.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having us here today.
Thanks for coming in. You doing well?
Yes.
All right. Ready to fight weeds?
Weeds and a lot of other stuff.
Right.
That
right.
We don't want in Montana.
Yeah. 100%. Josh Wagoner, also noxious weed, early detection, rapid response coordinator with the Montana Department of Agriculture. Your name is easier than your title, Josh.
Well, I've got that going for me.
Yeah. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Thanks for having me today.
Thanks for coming in. Megan Hoyer, good to see you again as well. Invasive Species Education Coordinator with the Montana Department of Agriculture. How's it been?
Good. Hi, Tom. Thanks for inviting me on to talk about National Invasive Species Awareness Week.
I know we're all kind of really excited about this because weeds are, whether we like it or not, a part of our lives and not the best part of our lives either. Tom Wolf is with us as well, and we get away from weeds a little bit and talk about aquatic invasive species, and they've been fighting that for a number of years and doing a good job, I think, as well. Tom is with the FWP, the Aquatic Invasive Species Bureau Chief. Hello, Tom Wolf. How are you?
Hey, Tom. How's it going? We don't have mussels yet in Montana and trying to keep it that way.
Liz, why don't you talk about how Montana is preparing awareness, fighting weeds? What's the importance of that?
Yeah, so with National Invasive Species Awareness Week, it just brings us an opportunity to talk to all Montanans about the importance of not only weeds, but a lot of other invasive species that maybe you're not aware of that you should be. We want to share tips on how maybe you can identify stuff, prevention methods, reporting if you see something out there. These are all important aspects because the sooner we know about an invader and we jump on it to take control of it, the better chance we have at preventing its spread. So all important stuff, and hopefully we're going to talk about some things that maybe people don't have on their radar.
We have some themes to talk about here. As part of this week, you guys are featuring awareness of individual kinds of weeds or issues. Let's go through that list.
Yeah. Well, and I'm with the Montana Invasive Species Council, and we have members that represent federal, state, county agencies, and different organizations that all deal with different types of invasive species. When we get together, it's really good to have all those different entities come and talk and collaborate and provide education as a whole. So that's how I've learned a lot about invasive species. So I think we can jump into the first topic we want to do is talking about noxious weeds.
Well, Josh Wagoner is here with the Noxious Weed Early Detection Rapid Response. He's the coordinator for that department with the Montana Department of Agriculture. So right up your alley there, Josh. Why don't you tell us what the public needs to know right off the top about the battle against noxious weeds and how important early detection is.
Very important. Right off the top, rush skeleton weeds, one that keeps me up a lot at night. The direct costs to Washington State, maybe $40 million a year. So if we can spend $40,000, $400,000 to keep it where it's at in Montana, it's money that we're saving to producers and landowners, agencies. That's my job.
How widespread is rush skeleton weed in Montana right now?
8 or 9 counties on the west side. We have maybe 4,000 acres. Idaho has 4 million acres. So they have probably twice as much rush skeleton weed as we have spotted knapweed.
Right. That is one of the things. We have to be aware of what's going on in our neighboring states and provinces to see what might be headed our way. And rush skeleton weed is one of those weird plants that doesn't have any leaves. It looks funny, doesn't it? That's why it's called a skeleton weed.
Yeah, it's very cryptic invader, hard to find. That's the big, big problem with it is it's hard to catch early, hard to see.
But we've been doing a good job with that, and they've been finding some spots. You guys been jumping on top of places that we're finding them and making more awareness about it.
Right. Huge priority. So Beaverhead County has had some new stuff come in this past summer. Luckily, we caught those 1 or 2 plants. It's moving down the interstate, but it's not yet to Granite County. We've got it held at Missoula County.
That's good. And there's other early detection rapid response weeds that are on your list on the lookout for. What else have you got out there?
Well, I think the three biggest threats to Montana financially and landowners in Montana would be rush skeleton weed, ventinata, and then Palmer amaranth and water hemp. I'd kind of class as one weed because they're very similar.
Right. Ventinata. Mm-hmm. What is ventinata?
Ventinata is a very small grass that's a very big problem. It's a lot like cheatgrass, but has high silica content, so nothing grazes it. It's a fire danger. It's spreading rapidly across the state. It's super expensive to treat.
What part of the state is it coming into right now?
It's coming up from Wyoming, south of Billings, and it's coming from Idaho on the west side. So we have 28 counties that have it now. In 2017, I think, we had 9 counties. Now we're at half the counties in Montana. The only place so far that's safe is north central and northeast.
Do you have an identifying feature for ventinata? People can, like, spot it, or should they just go to the field guide and, like, look at the pictures of it?
Maybe they should call me to come out and talk to them about it, because grasses are hard to identify. It's maybe a little bit too much to get into a podcast.
That's true. We can't identify stuff over the radio very easily.
Is that a service you offer?
I spend tons of time going out and just speaking to small groups, large groups, individual landowners, looking at land. I love it. I hate to be in the office.
What are people's, what's their response? Are they focused on prevention? Are they kind of in the exploration stage? I might have weeds. I don't know if I have weeds.
It's all over the board.
Yeah.
The response I get when I look out into the audience is a lot of time fear, shock, occasionally laughing. That's what I'm looking for. But I like to scare them too. Don't want to depress them too much, because we can succeed.
Tell me about the kind of damage that noxious weeds does on the ground.
Well, a lot of times they're crowding out, taking the resources that our natives need or that our perennial grasses that we've purposely planted need. That's rangeland situations, roadsides, wildland. For crops, same thing. They're just competing for resources that are very expensive. These three species in particular, expensive and hard to kill.
Let's move to Megan Hoyer here, again, invasive species education coordinator. As Liz was saying, what identifies these weeds? There's a list of noxious weeds. How do we identify them?
Montana has this natural heritage program, and they have a citizen science program where we've partnered with iNaturalist, and Montana citizens can go out and report invasive species, and that data gets collected, and it gets put in a cumulative area on the natural heritage resource page where we can give coordinators or people in the field the information that they need, the location. We also have these habitat suitability maps that we can layer over it, so it helps us prioritize these species. But really, there are so many different weeds. There's 36 noxious weeds. My favorite quote is, "With new invaders on the rise, keep your weed district by your side." Each county has a weed district. They are trained professional, and they're there for you to help. They're a free resource. Josh does a great job on our early detection rapid response species, but he can't handle the whole state, so I really do recommend contacting your local weed district.
That is the good first contact in your area. If you have a question, you've got those county weed districts in almost every county to help you identify stuff. And when they see something that's happening in more than one area, they can create a noxious weed, what's it called?
Management plan.
A noxious weed management plan. Yeah, talk about that.
Yeah, with noxious weeds, there's not one silver bullet to deal with them. We have to have a little bag of tricks, whether it's hand pulling, whether it's using herbicide, whether it's biocontrol. Each of these methods work for different weeds and different scenarios. When you contact your local weed district, they know your area. They know your soils. They know your chemical types. They know your water types. They know what's working in your area and what's most likely in your scenario to give you recommendations to best treat those weeds.
Yeah.
And don't hesitate, right?
Yeah, early detection, rapid response is key. It's less time, less money, less effort, and you're more likely to ensure eradication of that species. The longer we let species go, the more time they have to start taking over. They're on this list for a reason. Either they're a prolific spreader, maybe they're poisonous, toxic to human health, livestock, environment, but definitely getting out early and taking care of the problem is going to be your best bet.
I want to have both of you guys answer this question about, we've had a pretty mild winter around here, and I think, and Tom Wolf online as well with the FWP will have some comments about that, because we look to cold winters to take care of some of those insects. What about weeds? How well, Josh, do weeds survive, and do they proliferate in the spring after a mild winter?
Well, ventinata, I mentioned, is similar to cheatgrass, so it's germinating in the fall. It's a winter annual, and then it's staying green over the winter, and then the spring popping off and then making seeds. So throughout the winter, in any normal year, it's the roots are going to get bigger and expand. Well, a winter like this, they're going to have a great chance to do that. Rush skelton weed also has massive root system. In a winter like this, it's just going to keep growing. It's going to be more and more competitive. But then you look at the moisture aspect. So if we have low moisture this winter, and as we're having, and then we have a drought this summer, well, these weeds generally outcompete our natives in these bad conditions. Yeah. They thrive in harsh conditions. So it's going to be tough.
Yeah, that's a really good point to make. And so our producers are going to have to kind of be aware of that and focus on that. Not just only our producers, but everybody who wants to keep their yard green. Megan,
weeds
go ahead.
Affect everybody. They affect our recreationalists. They affect contractors and construction. They infect our farmers, our pocketbooks, our state lands that we all value and love. Yeah, I'm concerned about these winter conditions because if you go outside in some of these areas where we've been getting a little bit more sun, I've even seen poison hemlock. I've seen common mallow. I've seen some thistles. I'm seeing some of these weeds take advantage of these conditions. And Josh is 100% right. All this time with warm weather and the lack of cold, they're building their root systems. They're rearing up for summer, and they're going to have the edge.
And this is just Monday of the National Invasive Species Awareness Week. We're going to move to Tuesday here, too, because it's invasive species. And one of those, Liz, that you guys are focusing on, and I know the FWP has as well, is feral swine.
Feral swine, yes. So those are the wild pigs, the Eurasian boar. Thankfully, Montana does not have feral swine. The closest feral swine we have are in Canada. So there is a chance that feral swine could walk down into Montana. There's been some occasional reports that they think they've seen pigs walk across the border, but we don't have a group of wild pigs running around Montana. The other place in the United States where that's really bad is the southern states. They have a huge problem with feral swine. So the chance that somebody might intentionally truck pigs up to Montana, not knowing that that's not legal to do so, could be a real problem. So we just want to make awareness to people that Department of Livestock is the agency that manages feral swine. They work very closely with the USDA APHIS, Wildlife Services. And the third way I'd talk about feral swine is if domestic pigs get out and are loose on the landscape and they are unkept, they look like they're wild, and they can have three litters in a year. They can reproduce very quickly, expand their size very quickly, can become a real problem. As one of my friends like to say, pigs are nature's rototillers, and they can tear up a lot of ground. It's really a problem. They can eat crops. They can even prey on young livestock and young wildlife, ground nesting birds, that kind of thing. Super big problem. So if there is a pig out, you know, that you see that you don't recognize, first thing to do is to call the Department of Livestock's phone number, 444-2976. They answer that 24/7, and within 24 hours, they'll go out and investigate that. And I would ask people, call first before you shoot. We shoot predators, that kind of thing that is natural for us to do. But with pigs, we did have an incident where somebody shot a pig. It was somebody's 4-H pig from 30 miles away. And if they had just reported it, maybe we'd have got that pig back to their owner. So call first. We don't want people just shooting willy-nilly, because when you do have like a group of pigs, you have to take a coordinated action to trap and remove them. Shooting into a few group of pigs and only getting a few just makes those other pigs that much smarter, that much harder to get later on.
And that's been the strong recommendation from the FWP as well, Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, is to report these pigs first. And what they're trying to avoid, and I know Tom Wolf is with us here. We'll talk about aquatic invasive species. That's Wednesday's highlight. So, and Tuesday, squeal on pigs. So 444-2976. It's a Montana number, 406-444-2976. Go ahead and squeal on pigs loud and clear. But Tom, the effort has been to not encourage the spread of feral swine. And in some of those southern states, I believe hunting has contributed to the spread of feral swine.
Yeah, and we're trying not to create a hunting environment for them because that's an incentive to keep them. We want them gone. And that's why it's in Department of Livestock, also all the health issues that are associated with pigs. We do not want a population of pigs that we hunt here just because of all the impacts that they have of the environment.
$1.5 billion is estimated in damage nationally and annually from feral swine. So please do squeal on pigs. It doesn't, you can do it on a Wednesday. You can do it on a Thursday. It doesn't have to be a Tuesday, but that is one of the focuses for National Invasive Species Awareness Week. It goes on February 23rd through the 27th. So Wednesday is going to be, Tom, in your arena squarely, aquatic invasive species. Liz, why don't you set the stage for Wednesday here?
Oh, so important. We've got so many fabulous water resources in Montana. We're the headwaters. Really, we want to preserve the wonderful lakes and rivers and streams that we recreate on, that we use for irrigation, hydropower. And the Fish, Wildlife, and Parks is doing an amazingly good job with their aquatic invasive species program. And Tom can talk about their inspection station program for boats and what they're seeing out on the landscape.
Absolutely, yeah. So we advocate for all boaters to clean, drain, and dry their watercraft. And by doing that, you prevent the spread of invasive mussels and all kinds of other invasive aquatic species, plants and snails and that type of thing. We're really concerned about mussels coming into the state, zebra and quagga mussels. They're really common in the Great Lakes. They're common down south. A population recently was detected in Idaho, as well as a couple new detections in western North and South Dakota. And so it is just critical that boats are clean and dry as they move across borders, but also move within the state so that we don't introduce these invasive species. But at this time, we don't know of any populations of zebra and quagga mussels in the state. We know impacts would be significant if they show up. So cost to irrigated agriculture, to hydroelectric power generation, impacts to fisheries and the environment, these things are bad. And we have a unique opportunity to try to keep them out. And we rely on the public to help us with that by cleaning their boats, draining all the water out, making sure they're dry. And that holds the line against movement of aquatic invasive species.
Are they cooperative? Is the public cooperative in this?
Yes, yeah. So yeah. We have established watercraft inspection stations around the state at high-use corridors during the boating season. And that's to facilitate our legal requirements for inspection before launch. So any boat that's coming into the state or crossing west over the Continental Divide needs to be inspected before it puts the boat in the water to make sure they're not transporting aquatic invasive species.
I remember you guys reporting that you have prevented some of that in lakes because you have caught some of these boats that have not been cleaned, drained, and dried properly, mostly from out of state, right?
Yes. So every year we intercept a number of boats that are transporting zebra or quagga mussels. We intercepted 38 last year. We also intercepted over 500 boats transporting aquatic weeds. So it's just one of those things. We're out there looking at boats and finding these things. Although, you know, boater awareness in this issue, especially for Montana residents, is increasing. Support for the program is great. What we see is folks coming into the state. The inspection program isn't common as you go east and go south. So we are the front line and trying to hold the line.
That is one of the things people don't realize, Tom, is like Montana has such a strong roadside watercraft inspection program that when people come traveling from east to west, this might be the first place they're ever asked to pull over and have their boat inspected. So it might be a little shocking to them, but I think most people do pull over and stop. Tom, would you talk about the AIS prevention pass people need to get?
Yes. So for out-of-state boaters, there is a requirement for boats, motorized and non-motorized, to launch in the state of Montana. This is just out-of-state boats. Motorized boats, they get a $30 fee, and non-motorized boats, they have a $10 fee, and that meets their legal requirements to launch. But also, they need to be inspected before they launch in the state. So those two things are important for people coming into the state.
And we've got to remember, too, and it's not just motorboats. It's everything from stand-up paddleboards, kayaks, rafts, canoes, to sailboats and motorboats. They're all required to pull over and stop.
And Tom, I think it's important to note too, because you guys have been recognized for your AIS program, collaboration, you know, working with Idaho, working with Wyoming and North Dakota and other states. I think as I recall over the years, you guys have encouraged more and more of that because maybe you felt that that was lacking. How is that process now? Because we could do all we can here, but other states have got to also fight this same battle.
Absolutely. Yeah. So every Western state and province has an aquatic invasive species program, but the level of attention to the issue is variable depending on their funding and statute and all that type of thing. We really work closely together as Western states and provinces trying to compel more action for those that aren't doing as much because containment is important. So a water body in the Black Hills that has zebra mussels, we want to make darn sure those aren't moving to other water bodies in the Black Hills or to come into Montana. And so working together, we're doing the best we can to try to make sure these things aren't moving around.
And one other thing, Tom, that FWP is doing a really good job is collaboration within the state and some of those different entities you're working with to actually operate those watercraft inspection stations.
Absolutely. In Montana, it's a team effort. We have FWP contracts with local partners to operate most of these watercraft inspection stations. So we contract with conservation districts, tribes, and counties. And that just really increases the local buy-in and support and also makes these things more effective, especially in rural parts of the state.
So where are they found? I mean, how are they attaching themselves? And then how do you, disinfect that boat or decontaminate it?
Yeah, so zebra and quagga mussels, they like to hide. So usually they're in a dark crease or crevice underneath the boat. Usually around the motor is where they like to hide, in places where they feel protected and are out of the sunlight. So our inspectors are trained to get in there and look really close. They can be smaller than a grain of rice, so they can be really tiny. But our inspectors look for those things. If we do find zebra and quagga mussels, we decontaminate the boat on site using 140-degree water. And sometimes we make sure that boat doesn't launch. We actually launch the lock the boat to the trailer to ensure that boat does not launch until we follow up and make sure it's no longer transporting viable aquatic invasive species.
Are there fines? What's the legality behind this?
Yes, so we do have the opportunity to levy fines for knowingly transporting aquatic invasive species. Also fines for failure to stop at inspection stations. So that was changed to $750 last year for failure to stop. So, yeah, don't transport aquatic invasive species and stop at all open inspection stations. Inspections are quick and easy. Get on your way in no time.
Tom Wolf with us here, FWP. He's the Bureau Chief for the Aquatic Invasive Species Department with Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. Bucket biology. Tom, it comes up almost every year across the state of Montana.
Yeah, we had a recent introduction of pike in the Kalispell area recently. Fish need to be in their place, right? We manage for certain species in certain locations. And bucket biology is when somebody moves a species that they want into a new location. And that really impacts management goals of different species and impacts angling opportunities for different species. We have a program called Don't Let It Loose for Aquarium Pets. So any species of goldfish or plants or whatever, never dump that in the environment because you can introduce species that you don't want to take over. And the same thing for bucket biology, moving game fish species. Just never move fish around like that.
Eradication is costly, so prevention is the key. And that's what we're talking about here today. National Invasive Species Awareness Week is ongoing, February 23rd through the 27th, defending our health by stopping the spread. Tom Wolf again with the FWP.
Tom, if people want to know more about the Aquatic Invasive Species Program, maybe they want to find out where the boat inspection locations are, or they want to see what species you're looking at, I think it's fwp.mt.gov/AIS.
fwp.mt.gov/AIS. Your organization has a website for this, right?
We do. Invasivespecies.mt.gov is the place you can go to for the Montana Invasive Species Council. And we do have information resources about all the information we're talking about today. So if you forget everybody else's website, you can come to us. You can call me, and I will help you out.
Liz Lodman, Program Administrator for MISC. Take us into Thursday. Terrestrial pets.
Terrestrial pests.
Pets.
Yeah.
Pardon
so
me.
So we've got a couple different things with not aquatic, not weeds, but certainly should be on our radar. There are very bad tree bugs, tree pests out there. We don't have them in Montana, but they could get here through a couple different ways. And I'm talking about emerald ash borer, Asian longhorn beetle, and spongy moth. So these are bugs, insects that damage, kill trees. They started in eastern United States and have been moving their way west. They don't fly very far on their own. They're not going to fly here fast. How they get moved around is that people move firewood. And it's either the adult bug, or their larvae, or their eggs might be on firewood. And if people bring in firewood from out of state with those bugs, you've just moved them hundreds of miles and moved that problem further. Actually, emerald ash borer completely jumped over Montana and is in Oregon. It's like the furthest west. We don't have any of these species. They are knocking, emerald ash borer is knocking on our door in North Dakota, and firewood is the vector. The movement of firewood is such a concern that that's why we're asking people, do not bring firewood from out of state because of the risk that it could have those invasive tree pest bugs, the larvae, the egg masses on the firewood. You may not know that. So when you come to Montana, If you have visitors coming to Montana, just tell them, buy your firewood here. You can either, a lot of times at campgrounds, buy firewood at those campgrounds. If it's allowed, you can collect firewood at those locations. Or you just go down to the grocery stores and they've got firewood for sale all the time. Just so critical to keep those bugs out of Montana. Buy it here. Don't bring it from out of state. But another thing you might think about, if we have people recreating in Montana coming with a camper or an RV, egg masses could be laid on the campers, their barbecues, their equipment. There could be an actual adult trapped inside an RV or a camper. They found them that way. So we do have a couple different groups out there, DNRC and APHIS, who are putting out traps around areas just every year just to see, are they here? Because actually, by the time you've got a full infestation, that's when you'd notice damage to a tree. One or two bugs doing things, we're not going to spot those very easily.
I'm going to have Megan Hoyer weigh in here, invasive species education coordinator. It seems to me like it's not on my plate. Japanese beetles and the eastern heath snail, some of these terrestrial pests. I wasn't aware of the firewood issue. So education is a key part of this, isn't
education
it?
Education is key. Learning how to identify, learning how to report these species and how to properly act and manage these species, you'll really be doing your part. Ignoring these species at this time is no longer an option. The longer we wait, the more havoc they're wreaking. And Montana is beautiful. It's a unique place. Our environments cannot handle these invasive species. They came from somewhere else. They're used to being in their environment. When they come to Montana with our great river systems and our great soils and our temperature and climate, they really just outcompete.
And the other thing is wherever they came from, where they are native, they have other things preying on them. They have other things keeping them checks and balances so that they don't overpopulate an area. They come someplace new. They don't have those other species that they're competing with or that are keeping their numbers down, and they have a free-for-all and just reproduce.
Josh, do you have anything here? You're the guru of rapid response, right? Noxious weed early detection, rapid response coordinator with the Montana Department of Agriculture. Talk about the value then of rapid response in fighting this kind of invasive species.
Same deal. If you look at the invasion curve, if you're in the weed world, you'll see this all the time at presentations. And if you start at the bottom, the costs are really low. And then the longer they get, the more widespread they are. If you can imagine this in your mind, it just zips up and the costs increase wildly. I don't mean to brag, but my program saves a lot of money to the people in the state of Montana.
That's something good to brag about.
Yeah. One thing about Josh's program I'd like to add is how well he does work with the other states, and to know and to learn early about what these weeds are and to talk with the other states and provinces about how they're managing these weeds. So we're not ever starting from scratch. Josh, do you want to talk a little bit about working with partnerships?
Oh, yeah, this program would not work without, it's all about collaboration. Weeds, they don't care about lines on a map, and they certainly don't even care about fences on the ground. So we get together. I work a lot with county weed coordinators, federal agencies, other state agencies, private landowners. We work together to try to stop these when they come in, and we can mobilize fast. And then we try to be prepared before they even come by working with all the surrounding states and provinces to know what's on the border. And I try to help them by knowing what's coming their way. So it really is all about relationships. And I've always kind of thought I was a hermit, but it turns out I actually like people, especially if they like weeds.
That's a good discovery, right? On your personal journey. Liz, take us into Friday.
Friday is our Woody Invasives Day, and Megan Hoyer has been doing so much with those three species that she's going to talk about that people should be paying attention to.
That's right. Woody invasive species oftentimes were brought here for ornamental purposes. That means that they were pretty and they were desired. Bank stabilization, hedges and rows for property boundary lines. But woody invasive species, plants that came from somewhere else, we brought them here like common buckthorn, salt cedar, and Russian olive. Once they get here in this new habitat, they begin to change it quickly. They create these monocultures. They outcompete so nothing else can grow. Do you see effects of these species being invasive, like in our rangeland and stuff? But where it really hits home is our riparian ecosystems. Once buckthorn, salt cedar, and Russian olive get on our waterways, it's over. It's game over. So the early detection and rapid response is super important with woody invasive species because we think that broadleafs are expensive to manage. We think this is expensive to manage. When you get into removing trees and replacing the vegetation, because when you get rid of something, first thing that's going to come back is another weed. So when you go and you cut down, let's say, a Russian olive, the job's not done. Russian olive has a prolific root system where it's going to resprout and make your problem twice as hard. Salt cedar has a taproot, but it's a very advantageous taproot, and a lot of parts of the salt cedar plant can start new sprouts and keep the plant going. And common buckthorn creates so many seeds in such high density, it can actually crowd itself out. So after these species become established, our canopy floor becomes bare ground. We take them out, weeds are going to come in. A big saying with woody invasive removal is cover it up. The revegetation process is just as important as the removal process. Another point that I like to make with woody invasive species is when you go in and you take out an entire infestation, because they truly grow, and it's not just 10, 20 acres. It turns into thousands of acres. And when we remove those species, there is a few species that use them for habitat, and so it kind of needs to be strategically done. Planning ahead with woody invasive species, having a management plan in place, talking to other professionals in your area, realizing that your plan might not work and it's going to be ever evolving. It is timely, it is costly, and it's expensive.
I might just add, too, with the, as you mentioned, Megan, that these species were brought in as ornamentals or for shelter belts, you know, decades ago. But now we know better that maybe these aren't the things we want to be having on our landscape. I grew up on a ranch. I have a Russian olive in our shelter belt. But when they get into those riparian areas and keep spreading, so detrimental. Common buckthorn was something I never knew about till this woody invasive working group came along. Looks like chokecherry. So if you've got something out there, it kind of looks like chokecherry, but it's got a thorn between the leaves, that might be common buckthorn. And that was brought in for people to grow hedges. Josh walks by a place in Helena all the time that has a common buckthorn hedge in Helena, Montana. And now it's spread into wild areas, becoming a problem, huge problem in the Midwest. They spend hundreds of thousands of dollars treating it. But we want people to be aware that common buckthorn is a thing, because it's not been mapped very well right now. So we're trying to spread awareness about common buckthorn.
It is such a problem. Liz mentioned it. There is a woody invasive work group. We just developed a brochure and some resources to help with identification of this. It talks about the Russian olive having the small clusters of flowers, the shaggy bark, the silver green leaves, the olive-like seeds. The images that they used are really outstanding. They show that the common buckthorn has the serrated oval-shaped leaves. They have dark clusters of berries. There's a sharp thorn on the end of the twig. And with the salt cedar, for its identification, it's got these big, pretty pink flowers that come in the fall. It looks a lot like a cedar tree, but it's not. It's not the same thing as our normal cedars. So the Woody Invasive Work Group has developed a guide to help you with identification, as well as we just wrapped up a management plan. It talks about which of these species can we girdle to treat, which of these species do we need to cut stump, which species can be foil or sprayed, what are the protocols that are working for the state, because we do acknowledge and realize that the West is spending a ton of money. When I go goose hunting up in North Dakota, South Dakota, or even go over towards Wisconsin, the common buckthorn will crowd out the Russian olive. The Russian olive is the least of their concern compared to the buckthorn. So we find buckthorn in a few areas of Montana, but the more we seem to look for kind of finding it, when we find a plant or two, go back to early detection, rapid response. Now, woody invasive species is not like killing a broadleaf. I really suggest to contact your local weed district on this one. And if you are interested in looking at this woody invasive work plan and the management plan, it can be found at the invasivespeciesmt.gov website as well. But during the National Invasive Species Awareness Week, here in the Billings area, we have a group called the Buckthorn Bandits. A lot of time, education works really well as a community effort. We can go out, we can stand and talk about weeds, but until we really get place-based learning, hands-on, we see those weeds, we take action together, people can easily, quickly see the impacts.
So that takes us through Friday, but you got to fight weeds 365, 24/7. How do you do that, Liz?
Fight all invaders, not just weeds. Yeah, it is something that every single Montanan should be aware of, know where they can get their resources for whatever species that is of concern, and know what actions they can do to prevent things. So our website is a really good place to start, and we've got resources for all these different invasive species, and then it will take you to the actual agency that manages those species too. And that's the thing, is just awareness. And we've got to teach our kids too, proper behavior, like when they're out doing a field trip and we don't want to spread weeds around. Megan has been doing things where they all brush their boots.
Yeah, every time we go out in the field, whether it's a landowner, a group of students, if I'm taking my dogs by myself, I carry my boot brush station. As soon as I hit the parking lot, I play clean go. I go out and I enjoy the great outdoors, but I'm not going to be the one spreading invasive species. So I take my boot brush, I brush off, I go out and I recreate, I come back, I brush my boots off. Something else that I've been extending that with is when you're out on a hiking trail and you come across a plant like leafy spurge or spotted knapweed or rush skeleton weed, a choice is to walk around that infestation. And if you can't walk around that infestation, as soon as you walk through that infestation, take the time to brush those mud and weed seeds off of you and leave them at that spot. Yes, wind, water, animals carry weeds and other invasive species, but humans are vectors. They can go really long distances in a short amount of time, making it an easy option for an invasive species to hitch a ride.
Not only people walking around with their hiking boots, it could be mountain bikers, and it could be people on pack animals as well. So one, getting back to your question, Tom, what can people do? If you have a question about what is that species, there's a great app called iNaturalist that they can take a picture of, and it will pop up and tell you probably what that species is. And if you don't know what it is, if it's an invasive species, that information goes to the Montana Natural Heritage Program. That is how they found one of the Palmer amaranths that was detected last year. You know about that, Josh?
Yeah, we've many of these apps, EdMaps is one, iNaturalist is one, even just Facebook groups. Ask people around you, find out what you're looking at. We did find a Palmer amaranth even through Facebook on up in Miles City, and it's a huge deal. We need to be watching for that. Birdseed, combines, they talk about bikes and hiking. Well, even combines coming from out of state and equipment.
Construction equipment could be another thing. Yeah, absolutely.
Hunters, out-of-state hunters.
Yep. It's time to kind of go around the table and give some final thoughts to this as well. And I'm gonna lead off with Tom Wolf over there with the FWP, because, Tom, it's a familiar theme with fish, wildlife, and parks. It's up to us. And as I'm here, Megan talking, she knows it's up to her. And so she'll brush her boots. And I think that's vitally important for people to understand. Tom Wolf, again, FWP, Aquatic Invasive Species Bureau Chief. What are your final thoughts to our audience here today?
Everybody's responsible, right? So cleaning your boats is critical, and that helps prevent the movement of aquatic invasive species, draining all the water out, making sure they're dry. Also, wading boots and that type of thing can move invasive species. So it's just recreating responsibly, cleaning your gear off, and that helps prevent the movement of invasive species and helps protect our waters.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate that. And I appreciate the work you guys are doing. Megan Hoyer, any final thoughts for us here? There's nothing final, right?
No, it's always an ongoing process. I just want to reiterate that ignoring these invasive species is not an option. As soon as we can become that we are personally responsible for some of the spread of these invasive species, and if we could acknowledge that, it would be great to do our part and take time out of our day and give back and make sure we're not spreading the invasive species.
Josh, early detection.
Be aware of what the threats are. I didn't mention my website, but it's
mention it.
Kind of a long name like my title, so I'll just say Google MT space EDRR, Montana ED, Early Detection Rapid Response. You'll find my site and you'll find the big things to worry about.
Josh Wagoner again, the Noxious Weed Early Detection Rapid Response Coordinator with the Montana Department of Agriculture. And Liz Lodman.
So we live in the last best place, and it is the last best place. I'm a lifelong Montanan, as are, you know, my generations of my family. And I want to protect the place that we play, the place that we work, the place that we love from all kinds of invaders. So this is what we can do, is just help out with the knowledge, prevention, and making sure our actions don't create a problem.
Liz Lodman again. Oh, Megan.
So I am excited to be here today to just remind us that National Invasive Species Awareness Week is a chance for people to who don't necessarily work with invasive species all the time. So we're just really across the state encouraging, celebrating, and sharing your celebrations and how you celebrate. How I celebrate might be different from however somebody else celebrates. But as long as we're sharing the message that invasive species don't belong here and we have a huge impact, you're celebrating National Invasive Species Awareness Week.
I appreciate that. It is a year-round effort, and reporting tools are active. And they'll remain active beyond National Invasive Species Awareness Week. Early detection can save you as a taxpayer millions of dollars. And Montana has really, I think, dialed it in. I know there's a ways to go, but you guys are all coordinating together. I mean, we have got three different agencies here kind of working together. It's going to take that, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. That's what MISC is all about. We want to coordinate with all of our partners, agencies, entities to come together and make sure we're doing good things for Montana.
The site is invasivespecies.mt.gov/MISC. Which stands for Montana Invasive Species Council.
Yes.
Well, good job. Keep up the fight, you guys.
Thanks, Tom.